This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Apro gets out in front of the Fermi GPU bandwagon.
And a supercharge for battery research.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for May 14th, 2010. Available every Friday on iTunes. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research.
So, Michael, last week we spent a lot of time talking about what had happened in finance markets. There was quite a lot going on there. We were still sorting out all the pieces, and here we are a week later, and it looks like they're still sorting it all out. They still don't know what happened. You wrote a pretty good blog about that, showing different people's reactions to that, and it seems like people still don't know what's going on yet.
Yeah, it's been a week, and they're pored over the data they do have, and nobody knows what's caused it. They have a better idea of what went on, but yeah, I think they're going to be puzzling over that one for a while.
Yeah, it seems like people are sure that algorithmic or high frequency trading played a role, but the ultimate cause of what started it to topple is still being debated. And we talked about it for a while last week, but I'm not sure we're any closer to any answers this week other than what we already talked about. However, at the end of our podcast last week, we mentioned we didn't have time to talk about some of the news from that week, which was new GPU based systems from Apro, which you also covered.
Right. Last week, Apro, they were one of the really the first OEMs that came out with Fermi-based systems, the Fermi GPUs from NVIDIA, which we've been talking about for quite a while now, and the GPUs are not quite out yet, but Apro previewed their two platforms that they're going to be putting those GPUs into, and they're pretty interesting configurations there. One of them is their GreenBlade, which is something they've had their GreenBlade set up where they sort of offer this one-to-one pairing of CPUs and GPUs if you want the GPU option. With the new Fermi, of course, they're much more powerful GPUs, so you have a 5U enclosure and 5 dual CPU blades hooked up to 5 dual GPU blades. And it gives you basically five teraflops of double precision in that configuration, which is obviously quite a bit. And the other thing they came up with was their Tetra server, which was brand new, and it's just for the GPU, and it basically pairs a dual CPU and 4 GPUs inside a single 1U box. So that's a pretty dense GPU configuration. I don't think anybody else has that at this point. So those were pretty interesting announcements. But like I said, the GPUs are not in full production yet. So we're looking at the end of May, beginning of June to sort of see those start to ship.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, with Apro, of course, they're in blade-based systems, and we've talked about some of the more scalable GPU-based systems recently with Cray and Bull, and here you've got Apro really focusing on a different part of the environment by going for a smaller blade-based platform, which, of course, has to be optimized for power consumption, maybe hits a different part of the market.
Right. I mean, that's interesting, right? It is a different part of the market. I mean, Apro is, obviously, they're all about HPC, so they're excited to see these GPUs on the scene. They think their customers are going to kind of eat these up in certain of their application areas. So I think it's an interesting development for all the HPC cluster makers in that I think it's going to add more differentiated products out there instead of just being able to say, okay, we'll give you AMD chips, or we'll give you Intel chips, and we'll give you, you know, this configuration or that configuration. There's now more combinations to use. I mean, you've got a GPU in there. You can configure it in different ways. There's no standard way to just slap it onto a motherboard. In the case of Apro, that's what they're doing. They're taking NVIDIA modules, the M-series modules, and putting them onto the motherboards. But there's, you know, they've got NVIDIA has cards you can plug in. There's also, they have their own servers that you can hook up and integrate yourself. But I think the GPUs coming onto the scene this year is going to help HPC cluster makers out there. They're going to be able to differentiate their products a lot more now.
Well, the interesting thing for me there is that it's a statement of how far GPU has come in terms of its acceptance or adoptability, because for a while APRO was all about trying to work with standard components. Now they're trying to put together dense, scalable blades based on standard components. But the inclusion of a GPU now kind of demonstrates that there's a market demand that APRO is responding to, and that the GPU, in particular with NVIDIA and Fermi and CUDA, is far enough along the development path that APRO feels confident in just saying, here's a Fermi blade, and it's a standard product. That's an area that we haven't seen accelerators in a while.
Oh, exactly. And APRO is very high on this. They see certain application spaces really kind of grabbing onto this. Oil and gas, for one, and life sciences to a lesser extent, and then financial services, and of course, and the government labs, which kind of eat up these vector-like processors. Right. There's definitely certain verticals out there that APRO and probably these other cluster makers are going to start targeting for this. And yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of potential built up now with the Fermi GPUs, which of course have the ECC memory, the double precision performance that HPC users need. So it's a big step, and it's going to be interesting to see how this rolls out over the next year. I know you've sort of been looking at this in a more quantitative sense. I mean, are you seeing GPUs and other accelerator options adoption out there to any extent yet?
Yeah, well, absolutely. GPUs are getting increase in adoption, and they are starting to, with NVIDIA in particular, make a big dent in terms of who's adopting GPU. If you look at the way that NVIDIA has marketed these chips, brought them to market, it seems like they're getting now to exactly where they were headed all along, although I think they've taken a different route than they intended to take, or even a different route than they realized that they've taken, because they said they've been targeting these commercial applications all along, and I think you are now seeing people in financial services and oil and gas starting to take a look at how they can tune their algorithms to take advantage of acceleration. But that's not where it went first. How NVIDIA started its success is by getting a lot of smaller academic users downloading CUDA onto their smaller systems and playing around with it, saying, here, look what I can develop. And they got all these CUDA users out there. It wasn't ever stated as one of NVIDIA's target markets, but eventually I think that's where the momentum came from in HPC to help validate it as a concept, and now you're seeing that the commercial users that NVIDIA has said it's been going after all along are now finding the technology to be mature enough that they're looking at it at least in their research environments, if not already in their production environments. So NVIDIA, you could say they got it wrong in one respect, but on the other hand, they've been wrong all the way to the bank. So it's tough to argue with that kind of success.
Yeah, I think NVIDIA's been really good. I don't know how much was purposeful or not, but they certainly built up the GPU or GPGPU community from the grassroots, like you were saying, from the academics. And I think whether that was by design or accident, I think that was a very shrewd approach, or it turned out to be, because they built up a very large base of interested users, and I think that did disseminate out, and it became, these commodity parts and the CUDA environment became quite popular and easily adaptable for some of these commercial organizations.
Yeah, and we are still going to be seeing increasing adoption of accelerators. It's one of the things I'm going to be looking forward to, not only in our current site census where we've been monitoring it and where we're seeing GPU adoption, but I want to see what the long-term effect is on FPGAs. Right. Because if you're starting to get GPU into areas like financial services now, which is a big area for FPGAs, then then that'll bring into question the ultimate role between those two accelerator paradigms. I haven't yet seen a huge dent of GPU specifically in finance, but it is an area that we're going to keep looking at.
Well, that will be interesting to follow. I know I talked to one company in the financial services industry that was experimenting with them, but right, if they're being deployed now, and I have a feeling some are, we're not going to hear about them because usually they're very circumspect about the internal technologies that financial institutions are using. So,
right. Now, we also wanted to look at end users in another respect this week. One of the Insight program awardees from this year got a chance to talk to you, Michael, about their research with new battery types.
Right. I talked to Larry Curtis at Argonne about what they're doing with lithium air battery research. Like you said, it was an Insight Award program. It was something like 24 million hours of supercomputing time for this particular research application area. And it's Argonne National Lab. It's Oak Ridge.
Right. It was 24 million hours split between those two sites, 12 million each.
Right, 12 million each between Argonne and Oak Ridge. So 12 million on the BlueGene P at Argonne, and then 12 million on the Cray XT at Oak Ridge. There's some other people involved. There's Pacific Northwest National Lab, and also IBM is involved in this research. For whatever reason, they've been sort of high on this lithium air, or actually just battery research for a while. They've got sort of a group in there from Almaden and Zurich.
I think specifically the Zurich people were listed as co-investigators on the Insight grant.
Right, and they've been actively involved. I mean, they've been presenting at these seminars. In fact, there was a symposium at Argonne just last week just on this lithium research technology, and IBM showed up there as well. So, yeah, there's some big players there. It's getting a lot of traction. Lithium air, for those of you who haven't heard about it, is sort of the next generation of lithium ion, which is sort of the cutting edge of battery technology today for cars, at least. The thing about lithium ion, it can generally give you about 50 or 100 miles per charge for a car. Lithium air is a more advanced type battery. It'll get you to 500 miles, which is basically the same as you get for just a regular gasoline powered car. So the idea here is lithium air is sort of considered this holy grail of batteries. Basically being able to replace gasoline in that sense, in the sense of range and performance. So there's a lot of interest in this technology. Even though we're talking about Insight here, there's a lot of people around the world working on it. I know there's some work in Scotland that they've been doing some work, and other places as well. But this is a lot of supercomputing hours to throw at this, and they've just started out. I think Larry said there was basically 6 months into this project, and it's going to take a while, so it's not like we're going to see lithium air cars come out next year or anything, but perhaps within the next 3 to 5 to 10 years, depending upon how this goes, it's definitely a doable thing.
Right. And this is kind of the point of the Insight program, right, to throw supercomputing resources at problems that ought to advance U.S. competitiveness with something that's commercially viable, but the supercomputing hurdle is too big for a startup to get over in the early stages, or even an established company to make that kind of investment in an unknown technology. It kind of has to get driven by the government or academic research space before it goes commercial, right?
Exactly right. I mean, no startup is going to have a petaflop supercomputer line in their basement ready to do this work, and they wouldn't know how to use it if they had one. So, yeah, this definitely
right. Gets... Or even if you're a big car company and you've got some HPC resources, to say we're going to devote this many hours to a battery research of a battery that we might be able to bring to market in 10 years down the road. It's just not how they're going to use their resources. They're going to use their resources to try to get their 2012 minivan to market safer and faster.
Yeah, exactly. And the discoveries that are made out of this, I mean, that's sort of the question in my mind. It's like, okay, let's say they figure out some really you know, compelling materials for these lithium parts, and they're able to actually model a battery. How does that get out into the community? I mean, it's not like it's for U.S. competitiveness, but I'm always wondering about things like this, where let's say they came up with a breakthrough technology, and all of a sudden this could change, you know, the oil economy and you know, improve things in a very global sense. I mean, they wouldn't keep this to themselves. They wouldn't necessarily even keep it within an American company. I mean, I sort of wonder about how this information actually would get disseminated if something real breakthrough occurs in one of these projects.
Well, and that is my question about the InSight program in general. I'd feel more confident if one of the co-investigators on there was a battery company or a car company or something, and you knew how this technology was eventually going to go to market, what that transition plan is, if there is some kind of discovery, who is going to invest in it, who is going to bring this technology to market, is it actually advancing U.S. competitiveness. You notice the IBM team is not a U.S. team, right? Not all of the people who are grantees from the InSight program are Americans. But, you know, IBM's an American company. Presumably you're going to promote U.S. competitiveness here somehow, but it's not clear to me exactly how that's defined.
Yeah, and I've thought about that as well. I mean, yeah, calling IBM an American company is sort of a misnomer in itself. It's an international company. They just happen to be headquartered here. So obviously Oak Ridge and Argonne are American labs, and the DOE is obviously a U.S. agency. But, you know, the work they're doing here has a global reach, and you just have the feeling that this is not technology you would want to keep for American competitiveness necessarily, as if you're the DOE, for instance, and you're looking out presumably for not just your own nation's interest, but the interest of the globe. So,
well, I'm all for the interest of the globe, but these are our tax dollars, Michael, right?
Well, right, exactly. But, you know, this is like, well, it's the same issue as global climate change, and people go to these conferences and you pitch in, and you know everybody pitches in. So I guess to me, I'd like to see this research disseminated widely if there are true useful discoveries, and have everybody be able to take advantage of this. So
right. Well, I, for that matter, Intersect 360 is headquartered in the United States, but our research is global, and we do what we can to promote the health of the HPC industry globally. So I understand that that desire as well. I've been a little lighthearted about it, but I think the larger point of understanding how this technology could eventually go to market is the good one, and I wish them success in their discovery.
Excellent. And pretty soon we'll be going a little bit global. I think in a couple of weeks we're going to be going to ISC and get a taste of international HPC there. So,
now, what do you say we do a podcast as a preview show, look ahead to ISC next week?
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I'm just researching sort of my agenda there and seeing what needs to be done. So let's talk about that. Definitely next week on our podcast and give it.
I got to set up my agenda too. Everyone out there who wants to meet with us in Hamburg, we're there. We're delighted to meet with you. I'll be reaching out to you.
Excellent. All right. Well, until next week, Addison, have a great week and a good weekend.
Great. Thanks, Michael. Good talking to you as always.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.